right, here we go. Whoa, let me pop that thing down a little bit. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Bill Newell, working once again diligently on tomorrow's programming here at MSO News Sports. I'm going to turn off the music and see if I can adjust this mic level, because it's pretty hot right now. There we go. Lots to talk about tonight. A lot of high school action, of course, over the weekend, and we came up empty. By that I mean the North Shore came up empty in high school hockey action over the weekend, but nonetheless, some fantastic seasons by so many of our schools in the area, and thanks to all the coaches who helped us out. Bill Newell, following it, we had a if you check out North Shore Today on MSO News, New Sports, Bill has a report on all the stuff that took place yesterday, and we'll mention some of it. I want to bring in Tim Kearns here, though. Tim, let's talk a little bit about, I don't know, what are you looking at professionally, because so much is going on. Talk radio speculates so much about everything, I guess. It's sort of like an alternate reality in terms of the NFL. And then you've got the Red Sox and the Bruins and the Celtics. So where are you? Where do you land on all this?
Well, I mean, you know, we're in another good phase of being Boston sports fans right now, with the Celtics playing as well as they are. You know, it's a little rocky right now, but they've managed to control the length of the little bumps that they've taken. The Bruins, the same thing. They put a home and home with Detroit over the weekend, but they're still, you know, the best team in hockey. They've got 50 wins. They're over 100 points. The Red Sox, they're still an enigma with so many new names and positions to fill. It's going to be like a tryout camp the entire way through spring training to see who's going to make the final starting nine, and also the starting five rotation, because you get guys getting dinged up left and right there. The Patriots are starting to make some moves. They got rid of the tight end today for a seventh-round draft pick. Bill just loves to load up on those lower ends. But that was a move just to get rid of the salary. So is he planning a bigger move? All kind of questions surrounding what Bill is going to do. We have the retirement of Devin McCourty, you know, a 13-year veteran. Now you got another hole to fill in the secondary. So there's lots of things to talk about, lots of things to wonder about in terms of Boston sports, but there's also an awful lot to be happy about in terms of the way that the in-season teams are playing.
Great point, Tim. And I want to ask you your opinion of Devin McCourty.
Oh, he's always been a class act, Rick. First thing you have to say about him, he has always been a class act. No running the mouth. No standing over opponents, no finger pointing. You know, they say he's considering having a career in broadcasting. Well, you know he's going to go, if he decides that route, he's going to do an excellent job, because he is so well-spoken. He's so knowledgeable about the game. You know, he never shifted blame or pointed fingers at any of his teammates. It was always an us or them, and then what didn't I do to help us win on any given, you know, Monday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday game. He's going to be sorely missed, I think, in the locker room as well as on the field. But you could tell the last season, you know, he wasn't as quick as he used to be. He was a little bit slow to fill in the holes and stuff. But you couldn't be mad at him. It's 13 years of rocking and rolling and
yeah,
at the highest level that the game can be played. But you knew the handwriting was on the wall. It was about time that, you know, he retired. And I think he recognized it. He looked at the film and said, "Boy, I'm not as fast as I used to be. Still make the read, but it's just getting to make the play." And so now this allows Belichick the time to go and find somebody either via the trade route or via the draft to fill in that hole over the next few years.
Do you think he'll be an NFL Hall of Famer?
Well, he's got 3 Super Bowl rings. You know, he's got a number of All-Stars. Could you say he's questionable? Is he on the bubble? He might be on the bubble. But certainly the resume that he's managed to put together while he's been with the Patriots 13 years, you know, he's seen a lot of playoff time. He's had a lot of playoff victories, a lot of regular season victories. He's had a lot of big plays. If you had to name, you know, the top 10 guys over the last 10 years in the defensive backfield, he's one of them because he's simply been so consistent in the level of play he's brought every season.
Yeah, I think he's one of the coolest dudes ever on that team, and I hope he makes the NFL Hall of Fame. Of course, he's going to be in the Patriots Hall of Fame. And it was also great to see Matthew Slater coming back one more year.
Yeah, he plays the position like a wild man. But he's not on the field for an excessive number of snaps during the game.
Yeah, and he's been able to manufacture that into some incredible plays on special teams defense, and I guess he's another voice that they listen to in the locker room as well.
Oh yeah, and you know he's been all pro a couple of times, so you know he's also been at the top of his positional game.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to talk with Ty Hanrahan. He is an assistant coach at Endicott College. Because Endicott keeps going on. They had a bye week, as they will go play in the D3 quarterfinals now for the national championship. They'll be taking on, Norwich on Saturday. We'll talk with Ty about that coming up and, what's transpired in the last couple of weeks. A lot of, awards going to the Endicott Gulls hockey team. And we're also going to be checking in with our, basketball insider, Mike Grenier. And, you know, wherever we go, we start with the Celtics, but we go all over the place with Mike. And I do want to thank all the coaches, who have worked with me in particular in hockey. Bill has the same relationship in basketball. We came up dry over the weekend, you know, at the Saugus, except for St. Mary's girls. They continue to move on, and we hope to be talking with Frank Pagliuca later on, not tonight, but during the week. St. John's Prep ended up on the short end of a 1-0 score over the weekend, but Prep coach Christian Hansen couldn't have been more accommodating and nicer to us. And same for Triton. Ryan Sheehan, coach of the Triton Vikings, they came up short versus, who was it? Of course, I don't have it here. But they ended up with a tremendous season as well, with a great finish, except for yesterday. So congratulations to those coaches, and thank you so much. Don't forget the quarterfinals of Endicott hockey. But there's also St. Mary's boys and girls basketball are still alive, and so are Bishop Fenwick's. So they will continue in the tournament, and we'll keep our eyes on them, and Bill will be following that, of course. All right, so we will take our first break of the evening. We'll come back and chat with Ty Hanrahan of the Endicott Gulls hockey team. And reminder that you are listening to MSO News Sports. Don't forget the sports podcast, the Salem News Sports Podcast, drops tomorrow morning around 8 o'clock in the morning with Bill Newell hosting that. And they're going to be talking about Bishop Fenwick girls basketball in particular. Coach Adam DeBegas will be dropping by. And, of course, Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, Nick Kukuru, sports reporters, one and all, will be talking with Bill Newell, who is the host. That's tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it'll be up there, of course, forever, we hope. All right, we'll take our first break, as I mentioned, and we'll come back with Ty Hanrahan. You are listening to North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. Stay with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back now with Ty Hanrahan, an assistant coach with the Endicott Gulls super hockey team. Ty, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Doing good. And I know Mr. Kearns is on the other end of this thing, anxious to talk with you. I want to ask you first, can you tell us about the most recent game? Because that seems like forever ago.
Yeah, honestly, it was a we ended up winning our conference championship 6-0 against Curry on our home ice, which was pretty cool.
And that propelled you into the tournament?
Yeah, that gave us a first round bye. So we played the winner of Plattsburgh and Norwich, and Norwich ended up winning that one in overtime up at Plattsburgh on Saturday. So we're now getting ready to prepare for Norwich on Saturday night here at 7.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
Coach, 22-2-2. I'm going to go. I got to step out. I got to go play my numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy.
You know, you're home and away balanced. 12-1-1 at home, 10-1-1 on the road. It doesn't matter where you play them. You get the same results.
Absolutely, and I think a big part of that is just our mindset. It's never really was, you know. I think a lot of times when you look at the big picture, you can get caught up, but you know, we just really prepared for every weekend ahead of us and every game ahead of us. So once we were done a Friday night game, we were ready to go for the Saturday game, and then the next Monday it was, all right, who are we playing next? It was just really focusing on, you know, the biggest game of the year, which is always the next one you have. So I think that played a huge part into our success this year.
Ty, can you tell us about some of the awards that the Golds have gotten? Because I'm looking at on your website, the coach and several players have gotten major national awards.
Yeah. So I think RJ won the Coach of the Year in the conference, and Andrew Kirpov was co-player of the year in the conference. And then we had a few guys on the first, second, and third team, I believe, for all-conference voting. And honestly, I just think it just speaks volumes to the amount of work and preparation everyone on that list has in mind. And honestly, I think it reflects the whole team, too. You know, I was just sitting back thinking about it the other day. You know, we actually have seniors on our team who, you know, haven't been in the lineup that much, but they still come to practice prepared and practice hard every day, and that just helps everyone get better. So I think all the other guys would say those are all, you know, team awards, but it's nice to see the guys get the recognition that they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Coach, you know, I'm looking through the news release regarding the award winners, and I think a lot of people in the area would be really amazed at the distance you guys recruit kids and get them to come to this little, you know, small school on the east coast of Massachusetts. Kirkwab is from Oregon. Sarah's from Tennessee. They have hockey in Tennessee.
Yeah.
That one. You know? And but your kids come from all over.
Yeah, honestly, junior hockey really helps with that. It kind of helps us look at it more as a whole. The other assistant coach, John Caricato, sacrifices a lot of time and puts in a lot of hard work going to see these guys play on top of video and staying on touch and talking with them to help RJ. So that way that load is taken off his plate a little bit. So he's the one who deserves a lot of the credit for that too. And then, it's crazy. Like one of our freshmen this year, Jack Ring, was playing in Alaska last two years and through the North American Hockey League. And that's where we started following him. So, yeah, it is crazy to scope it, but I think what helps a lot with that is junior hockey.
So it's almost like for a lot of kids playing baseball and football to go to a JUCO for a year or two,
yep,
play there, hone their skills, and they then use that to jump to a full 4-year school to play their last couple of years, and a lot of times they're grabbing scholarships when they're making that jump.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it's like. It's, you know, whether some guys will play 3 years of junior hockey or some guys will play just 2 years, some guys will do like 1 year post-grad prep school and then in 2 years a junior. And we have a couple guys that just ended up coming right from prep school. Kevin Craig actually came right in, played for the lineup, played in our lineup right away and has been here for 4 years. So definitely take a little bit of a different person. I don't think I've seen a 19-year-old in my time here be as physically and mentally mature as he is, but it really is brings guys in really prepared.
I'm listening to you, Ty, like you're an old man. You got a lot of experience, yeah. But good for you. What are you, 24, 25?
23.
23, even younger. Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, what's
yeah.
the preparation been like? You guys have had 2 weeks off and a rematch with Norwich that didn't turn out so good the first time around.
Yeah, I mean, we had a couple injuries and we were very new this year. That's not an excuse, obviously, but we were had a lot of new pieces in our team and kind of were just still figuring things out. And that was a pretty tough opponent for the second game of the year, and they were very well prepared. Honestly, you know, I think sometimes in these big games, as the season gets longer and games get more important, I guess, some people, you know, will try to, you know, change it up or, you know, maybe be like, oh, we're late in the season, we're going to change up the practice. And we're not changing a thing. We're still doing our thing, coming to the rink, getting our skate in, doing video session the same way we normally would. And guys are making sure they get their lifts in throughout the week, too. Just it's keeping it consistent, I think, is what's going to help us.
You know, Coach, certainly having the hockey rink right on campus and the campus not being especially massive, though the footprint continues to grow, but it's a very compact, concentrated campus. But that's got to alleviate a lot of the stress of the guys getting from class to dorm to practice.
Absolutely, and I think it's a huge recruiting tool to just come down, see our rank, and see the facility that we have for Division III program, and being able to walk there. And when living on, I live off campus now, but when I was on campus, I would walk there every day, and just having ice available throughout the day too for guys that want to come in, just touch the ice at, you know, 11 o'clock or between classes or whatever. It really is huge because when we travel to other schools, you know, we'll play at some that don't have their own rink. We'll have to play at weird times or, you know, it's just there's a game before and a game after. You know, off, you know, we'll have the ice whenever we want. And we have an amazing rink staff that has contributed to our success as well.
What's
you know, a lot of thanks and gratitude has to be pointed at the alumni of the school that have contributed so much to the to fund the expansion of the school, not only academically, but athletically as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. None of this would be possible without them. None of this. So just to know that we're backed by our alumni is something that's really special. You know, like our students are on spring break this week, and the tickets for our game Saturday still sold out in under 10 minutes. So just to have that and just know that we have a pretty big alumni around us and just seeing people around the North Shore that, you know, recognize us wearing our Endicott hockey stuff. It's really special. You know, you're part of something special, and it's what we always talk about. You know, we have a big sign in our room that says Leave a Legacy, and everyone sees it coming in and everyone really takes it to heart.
How has your role changed since you started with the team in a student role, a student assistant role? How has that changed to where you are now, and what are you doing now? What is your role in preparing for this next game?
So preparing for this next game is kind of like what I would do for every game. So it's we'll start the week off with cutting film from our opposing team's previous game, and then maybe a couple other games that we want to pull from, whether it's a game that they won by a lot, game they lost by a lot, just to find a couple things, and then we'll round out our game plan and usually on Sundays and Mondays. And then, but yeah, honestly, freshman year, I just came in and, you know, did a little things here and there on game day as I was rehabbing my knee, throughout the week. So I couldn't be around practice. And then sophomore year on, I kind of evolved into getting a little more involved with the practice planning. And, you know, this year I'll meet every day before practice with our head coach, just to go over the practice plan. And then on the bench wise, I've been on the bench for this is my second season,
mm-hmm.
and I run the D, so doing that has been awesome. I've been able to continue my relationship with the guys the same way as before I was on the bench. And there's definitely a different level of trust there that, you know, guys will feel comfortable telling me, and I'm able to bridge that to RJ. It's a really interesting dynamic, and I'm shocked, you know, like after, you know, this year, I'm shocked that it's not a thing more, and especially in hockey where guys come in a little older and whatnot. But, just to be a bridge, I think, is my biggest role, is to make sure I can read the guys in a way that, you know, being in the room, because I've been in a room before, you know,
yeah.
able to read the room and
mm-hmm.
find a way to translate it to say to, you know, RJ or whoever, what I think maybe they would want or like in practice or like an off day or stuff like that. So it's really expanded, but I couldn't be more thankful.
Awesome. I don't know if we lost him or not.
No, Rick, I was just only trying to come up with something else.
Oh, okay, okay.
You know, every time I've had something to add in there, you keep cutting me off, so it's like, you know, I feel like I've been checked in the board about a half a dozen times tonight. keeping with the theme. See, now he goes quiet.
Well, anyway, you got tickets sold out. The game is a home game. What time is it on Saturday?
7 p.m. on Saturday night.
7 p.m. at the Bork, and hope to fill it up. I'm not crazy about the sight lines at the Bork, but how's the ice? Because isn't there a small area between the two blue lines? Isn't it shorter than usual?
Yeah, it's a bit of a smaller ice, especially compared to, you know, Norwich University. So there are some times where, you know, you kind of got to think game plan wise to play a different game when you're playing on a bigger ice or an Olympic sheet ice compared to our rink, which is a little smaller.
Yeah. All right, Ty, I'm going to let Mr. Kearns take the last thing. He can do whatever he wants.
Ty, just explain, what would be some of the adjustments you would make from going to a big rink at Curry to your smaller rink?
So our smaller rink, you know, sometimes, I'm trying to think of the biggest rink we've played on this year. So if we're playing on a bigger sheet of ice, you know, we're going to try to maybe stretch our wingers and buy some time for our defensemen to allow them to make a bigger skate to the red line. You know, just making sure we're getting pucks in deep and getting their D to turn. But on our rink, you know, whether it's just a quick change of, you know, hey, if you can get that puck on that instead of deep, you know, that's what it is. The structures will stay the same, but it's just a matter of what we do with the puck and whether or not we're stretching our wingers or having them stay underneath.
All right,
it
well.
It depends on what we're seeing from the team we're playing and their aggressiveness of their defense.
And my final question is, once you've seen a team, how do you game plan around that? Because as you said, that was way back at the beginning of the season. You have film on them since then?
Right. And having that film, especially since it's at our rank too, is going to help. And I'm sure it'll help them too, but that's not as much used as their most recent games will be used. And so, same with them, you know, teams usually, especially in the beginning of the year, teams usually are a little different than what they are, or especially around come playoff time.
Hmm. All right. Any final thoughts there, Coach?
No, I'm good.
All right.
What do we best of luck this weekend, Coach?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I want to wish you the best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
I told you, but we can't get tickets, I hear.
I could try to find a way to get you guys some tickets for sure.
We could get in through the press box, I'm sure. Oh, my goodness gracious. Hey, this is awesome, Ty. Thank you, and keep winning so we can keep talking.
Thank you very much. Oh, that I would love that.
Absolutely. Thank you. Take care, Ty.
Awesome. Have a good night.
You too. All right, that's Ty Hanrahan, who's an assistant coach at Endicott College for the college, the Golds ice hockey team, and are doing so well as I'm stuttering and stammering here. Tim, have you been? You've been to the Bork, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I was. Who's I talking to? talking to somebody recently about that, the short distances between the blue lines, and they were talking about some of the other rinks, like Gloucester has a huge area behind the cages. So it's different in different rinks, which I thought everything was all standardized.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Kind of like soccer pitches. They're not all the same size.
Yeah, strange. Okay, let's get changing here. I'm going to play a quick five-minute sports report from Bill Newell from his morning sports report that will get you up to date on yesterday's hockey action. And then we'll turn it over to Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. So once again, please stay with us, and we'll be back.
Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell with sports. The Bruins played back-to-back home-and-away games with the Red Wings this past weekend, winning Saturday but losing 5-3 yesterday on Sunday. Bruins coach Jim Montgomery on his team's second period effort.
Yeah, I thought our second was very much like our first. We didn't have the same compete level on one-on-one pucks. We weren't first on pucks. But Detroit outskated us and outworked us.
Up next for the Bruins, they're in Chicago tomorrow night. The Celtics were off yesterday. They'll play in Houston tomorrow night, and the Red Sox play the Blue Jays today. In MIAA hockey semifinals from yesterday, Boys Division I, Pope Francis got the game's only goal midway through the third period and beat St. John's Prep 1-0. Prep coach Christian Hansen.
Instead of just putting pucks on net, going to the net, we're looking for that perfect shot. I thought in the neutral zone we got a little bit too pretty instead of just getting in and get the work. So you got a talented hockey team, and they want to play hockey a skillful way. And sometimes it's hard to change those habits in a game like this. And if it were a high scoring game, that's how the game would be played. But we knew it would come down to a goal, so that's why it's frustrating. That we didn't do a better job of getting pucks to the net and playing a little different style.
It was a good run for his seniors as they had hopes for their second straight state title.
It's hurtful to lose. I have such a tremendous group of kids in that locker room that have accomplished so much, right? And that's our message to them is incredible journey for the seniors. All those seniors last year won 22 games. Those seniors won 20 games this year. They won a state title at the Garden. They have rings. And there's a lot to be thankful for. And then for me as a coach, it's about already, maybe not this moment, but starting to get ready for next year.
St. John's Prep coach Christian Hansen. In boys division three play, Neshoba beat Triton 4-1, the last goal an empty net tally. Triton started the third period down 3-0, made it 3-1, but couldn't get any closer. Triton coach Ryan Sheehan on just trying to get more pucks on net.
Yeah, I mean, early on, it's tough to give up a two-goal deficit that early in the game. I thought we felt it out after that and played fairly evenly with them. Their goalie made some great saves, and, we really couldn't riddle them. The third one was definitely a deflator. Our defenseman didn't think it went in, but the ref was pretty decisive on his call. So, there's nothing you can change about that. And then, you're holding it a little tighter trying to go score goals, and you're kind of getting out of your structure and your system. So, I credit to the show, but they played a great game.
Sheehan adds it was a good tournament run for the Viking season.
I'm proud of these boys. We didn't have a fantastic season. We had a decent season. The run we went on playing our best hockey towards the end of the year, I can be proud as a coach.
In girls D1 semifinal play, St. Mary's of Lynn topped Billerica Chelmsford 6-3. The game was scoreless after one period, then 2-1 St. Mary's after two periods, and then six total goals scored in period three, four of them by St. Mary's. Coach Frank Pagliuca of the Spartans.
I think it's the first time all year we let in three goals. I was proud of our kids to kind of stay with the program. We figured the goalie, Billerica goalie played great. First two periods really stymied us. Third period, we were able to get some pucks through, which were good, and just real proud of my kids. So tough to get here. They've been through a lot all year, and I can't be more happy for them right now.
A nice win for St. Mary's as they got back to the Final Four for the first time in 10 years, and they played a very good team yesterday.
They just played us physical, and their goalie played outstanding tonight. And we knew that coming in that, that league, I think, is one of the best leagues around. Obviously, you got Shrewsbury sitting on the other side, Billerica. We knew we were going to get a tough game. That's why power seating works, because Billerica is where they should be. They deserve to be here, and they played a great game. We were fortunate enough to get a couple bounces. I thought after the their power, the one that went off the girl's head and went into the net, I was like, is it going to be this crazy type of game? And it was. Third period was crazy.
Local high school basketball team still alive as they enter the final four stage of their tournament, the St. Mary's boys and girls teams and the Bishop Fenwick girls. We have interviews on our website with all three of those coaches from the weekend. That is sports along with Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. We're back at it with another week. Have a great Monday, everybody. And thank you for listening to North Shore Today.
We are MSONewsSports.com, the North Shore's news and sports website, featuring North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, the North Shore and Merrimack Valley Sports Desk shows, hosting on Thursdays, North Shore Today, the area's multimedia, community-based daily magazine. Our connections feature interview segments. Spread the word about MSONewsSports.com as we support North Shore communities with our exclusive content, powered by Moynihan Lumber, Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Is Mike Grenier, the ultra-famous and fabled sports writer from the Salem News. Mike, want to start off tonight's discussion. I'm sure we'll get through all the major sports. But starting off with the guys who aren't playing right now, the New England Patriots, they had a very busy couple of days here making some signings and some trades. So let's get right to it. They re-signed Jonathan Jones, their best defensive back, to a two-year deal. Very, very important.
I agree. 2 years, $19 million, I think, Tim. And I think, obviously, they wouldn't invest that kind of money unless they really felt this guy could be a key factor on the defensive unit, you know?
Yeah, especially in light of the retirement of...
McCourty.
Of McCourty. Certainly, you know, you're going to need some... talented, experienced players back there to really settle down. Some of the younger guys are going to have to step up and take up the slack.
Yeah, I hated it. I'm glad for McCourty. He had such a long and illustrious career and won some championships. I hate to see him go though, but he's sort of the Al Horford of the Patriots, right? The guy you could rely on, the old wise head, and still a terrific player. So hate losing him, but we wish him well in retirement. So Jonathan Jones signing is certainly an important move going forward for the Patriots.
Yeah, certainly is. You know, Rick and I talked about McCourty at the top of the show, and you know, and I said that, you know, he's the guy that came in, basically, you know, kept his mouth shut, led by example. You know, didn't have to get in people's faces, didn't get in the opponent's faces. Just went out there and did his job, and that's how you've noticed him, by continually him making big-time quality plays.
And he's the perfect Bill Belichick player, right? I think, meanwhile, you know, you had the other Slater coming back for like his 16th or 17th season. Obviously, a special teams guy doesn't play nearly as many snaps, very few snaps in the course of a game. But the type of player Belichick loves, sort of like McCourty in the sense that he's an attitude guy, a club, a locker room leader, and still an excellent player, still can do it on the field. So getting Slater back is good. Losing McCourty, but, you know, McCourty's had his run. He had 13 seasons, I believe it was, and it's time to move on, for him to move on. And Belichick had nothing but great things to say about him, and I'm glad that he's able to retire in one piece and all that.
I was just going to say, Mike, he literally can walk away from the game with his head high.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. He'll be going down in Patriots history. People will remember him fondly 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because he contributed to NFL championships, Super Bowl championships, and was a perfect Patriots attitude player as well as a very good football player.
Yeah. And again, he was that consistent player when there was such not so much discord, but dissonance in that secondary. The one guy you could look to there was Devin McCourty for stability.
No doubt about it. And I think what the other guy you wanted to mention didn't have nearly as good a career in his really short time with the Patriots. You announced the name, Tim, and we'll talk about him.
Who's that?
The tight end.
Jonnu Smith?
Yes.
Who came with all these glowing recommendations about what he had accomplished before, and Well, you know, he's one of those guys. He came highly touted and gets hurt right away.
Yeah.
Never seemed to get back to his previous level of play when he was with his previous team. And so people really let him have it. I think because of the disappointment level that we had, because we expected so much of him, and then we got so little out of him.
Oh, yeah. And of course, the Patriots believed in Kraft and Belichick, went the route. They gave him a four-year, I think, Tim, it was 4 years, $50 million.
Yep.
And so they really believed he was going to be a great tight end. But I recall, even when he came up from the Ravens, I think it was, his numbers, it's not like he had a great year where he caught 60 or 70 passes. I think his best year might have been where he had 34 or 35 catches for 600 or 700 yards. He never had that huge year, but obviously the Patriots were counting on him to have a couple of huge seasons, and it just didn't happen. There's one game, Tim and Rick, that I remember in the last year or so where Jonnu Smith was targeted five times. They threw the ball five times. He dropped four passes. He dropped. I've never seen a guy drop four balls in one game, especially a tight end. And it just, right then and there, I was totally frustrated with his lack of progress and he's a physical specimen, and he seemed to be a good locker room guy, big, strong guy, but he just never developed into a threatening tight end. Hunter Henry was a far better tight end the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just in terms of sure-handedness.
Yep.
You know, if in most cases, if you got it in the area of Hunter, he was going to make the catch. Whether
right.
it was 50 yards because they didn't send him on those kind of routes, but he could get you the yards you needed.
Right, exactly. Whereas Jonnu Smith, they could never trust him as a receiver. And, you know, I'm not nuanced enough to know how great a blocker he was, you know, anything else he might have done, but we certainly, he didn't come through as the receiver they thought he would be. And so it just didn't work out, and you could tell his value in league terms by the fact that they only got, what, a seventh-round pick for him? A seventh-round
yeah.
pick.
Well, I think, you know, I heard a voice today saying that, you know, Belichick willing to take just a seventh. He was looking to get rid of that salary.
Yeah.
Free up that money to maybe get after some free agents out there.
In that sense, it's a good move, right, Tim and Rick? It's a if it clears some cap space and they can get someone who's useful, whatever part of the team where they need players, it doesn't care, doesn't matter if it's an offensive line, defensive line, linebackers. If they clear some cap space and get a useful player, then it's all for the good. It's just too bad that he didn't work out here. It was, you know, just it turns out to be a bad decision.
Yeah. Looking at some of the others, they re-signed the linebacker McMillan. They re-signed the offensive lineman Ferentz.
Yeah.
Not big names, not gaudy names, but guys who went in there and did a credible job for them, didn't really hurt the pass when they were on the field.
You're right, and that's the type of player Belichick values, these guys that you don't hear too much about. They may not make the Pro Bowl, but they're consistent within the Patriots system, you know. These are the guys, instead of going for all these big-name free agents, like, for example, mm-hmm. Odell Beckham. I know his name has been tossed around this month here as 13 or 14 teams interested in him, including the Patriots, but the Patriots would never sign him to a huge contract because they'd rather pay their interior linemen a decent wage and keep them around for 4 or 5 years, feeling that they're built towards the championship with guys who can play consistently year after year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always been, you know, we look back on the history of Belichick and the time he's been there. He wants the Wonderlic Wonders. Do they still give the Wonderlic test now?
No, I think that's been abandoned.
Really?
I don't think it's politically correct anymore.
Bill used to live by that, the outcomes of those tests. That's why he drafted in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds, because they were the smartest guys.
That's right. I think there's another way they do it now, Tim. I don't know what it's called, but there's another way of determining your football IQ, and it's just not the Wonderlic test anymore, you know? So,
to some of the guys that we've gotten, you know, they couldn't have passed the Wonderlic test.
Right, exactly. You know what? I'm wondering if the three of us could have passed the Wonderlic test. What do you think, Rick?
Not me. I don't know enough about football. I know enough not to.
It's just that, you know, still would rather have a really smart guy in the sixth round that he can coach, that he can teach, who understands, you know, and instead of that first round knucklehead, you know,
right.
who got gift and turns out he can't play worth the lick when you put another pro in front of him.
Right. Well, Nikhil Harry turned out to be that player for the Patriots.
They showed on him when he was at Arizona State the catches he was making down the sideline and in the end zone, going up above people, grabbing one hand. And I'm thinking, did he lose his hands when he got here?
Yes.
Exactly. But those were the only kind of catches he could make.
Right. And in one sense, he's the Robin Williams of the Patriots. You know, you can never rely on him because of his health, lack of being available. He just did not develop as a player, and then I think he went to the Bears. Same thing happened. He never got on the field. So you have to move on from those guys because they're not going to help you immediately or in the future.
Yeah, and that's one thing Bill doesn't have a high tolerance for. If you're not going to help us, you can't be here.
Right, and your old friend Bill Belichick, because he used to say something like one of his other famous, you know, easy type of mantra that he had. In other words, the words are very common, but he would say, football players play during the football season. Meaning, if you're going to be on the sidelines with an ankle injury for 4 or 5 weeks, you're of no use to me. That sounds cruel, but that is the world of the NFL.
But, you know, he also had another mantra. Better a year early than a year late.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think Bill Belichick certainly goes by that philosophy. He's probably, other than Parcells, maybe the most unsentimental coach in the history of the league. I mean, he can look back on a player after he retires and say all the great things about him. But even a player with a big reputation, if he feels that player is not going to be a good player in that particular year, he'll get rid of him in July or August. And move on to a younger player who's unheard of.
Oh yeah, you know you're gonna get effort. You're not gonna get attitude.
Right. Exactly. So you know it's a revolving door, as we know, with these pro athletes and all that. But I think moving along from Jonnu Smith is a really good move for the Patriots. Signing Jonathan Jones is another good move for the Patriots, and I guess we'll see what happens with Mac Jones and see if they can improve within the receiver core department, you know?
Yeah, I just think, you know, bringing back Bill O'Brien is going to be such a positive experience for Mac because he's going to have a true offensive coordinator.
Right.
And a guy who can coach quarterback.
Yep.
You know, and I think it's going to restore his confidence because I think, you know, there was so much confusion.
Oh, yeah.
And so little trust and confidence in an offensive coaching staff that, I mean, you just don't see a kid of his nature yelling on the sideline.
Right.
And the frustration level was so high with that kid.
Yep. You know? Yep, I agree.
And I hope they don't pull the trigger on a trade a year early and this kid goes out and flourishes.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, people were talking about, obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo coming back, but you just see he signed two years with the Raiders, I think, for like $67 million to replace Derek Carr. So I think it's great there's going to be no more Jimmy Garoppolo talk in the offseason. I like Garoppolo a lot, but let's see what Mac Jones can do in developing as a good starting quarterback. And, you know, I think you have to give him at least another year. So I'm happy for Garoppolo. He's got himself a good financial deal, and he's going to be with the Raiders, who, you know, the Raiders get high ratings in TV and all that stuff. For some reason, even though they've been a losing team, they're a very popular team. So we'll see what Garoppolo can do there. How about the Celtics now, Rick and Tim? They made
one last thing.
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry.
Has an NFL player ever made more money for the limited time he's been on the field?
Yeah, Chris Sale. Oh, he's not an NFL player, though, is he?
No, you're right. You're right, though, Rick. You're right. I agree with you completely about Chris Sale. But, Tim, to your point, I don't know. I mean, there's players who've been injured before, and have gotten fat contracts and all that. So I'm not quite sure, but I know the point you're making, you know?
I'm telling you, he just keeps going and getting these massive contracts. It must be his good looks.
No doubt.
Yeah. But, you know, obviously, too, if we're talking about changes, you know, the Celtics, Damon Stoudemire, who is, I think, you know, Joe Mazzulla's right-hand man on the Celtics coaching staff, is leaving the Celtics immediately because he's taking over as the Georgia Tech basketball coach, head coach. So some people view that as a big thing. I personally don't. I think Joe Mazzulla can handle the team, and there are enough assistant coaches with him that will just keep the machine going. But I'm happy for Damon Stoudemire. He was a nice player in the NFL. He was a former first-round pick. He had a 12- or 13-year career as a player. He was kind of a rising star as an assistant coach here, and he might have been a head coach of the NBA had he stuck with the Celtics. But, you know, he saw his opportunity, and he's with Georgia Tech, and the Celtics have to move on, and they will.
So what's the status of the team right now? How do you look at the last week? I mean, what are they, 6-4 in the last 10 games?
Yeah, but you know what? I think it was kind of a nice thing for the Celtics on Saturday. Was it Saturday night? Yeah, they won. They won, and the Milwaukee Bucks finally lost the game in overtime to the Golden State Warriors. So instead of being 2.5 back, they're 1.5 back. And that's kind of like the way it's been trending lately is neither team could gain even a half a game on the other until the Celtics had their mini slump, losing 4 out of 5, and the Bucks took over first place. But now the Celtics are in a position where, you know, if they have a good road trip, the next 6 are on the road. I think that's where the difficulty lies. And I was looking at it before we started talking here tonight, and the Milwaukee Bucks have back-to-back against really good teams. Tonight and tomorrow they play Phoenix one night, and they have a really good team they're playing tonight. So there's a chance they might lose one or both, and Giannis has been out with an injury, whereas the Celtics are on the road for 6. But tonight's game is against the Houston Rockets, who have one of the worst records in the NBA. So they have a chance possibly to gain some more ground and maybe overtake Milwaukee down the stretch when they have several home games in the last nine, among the last nine or 10 games of the season, and maybe they can take over that first place spot again, which I think is going to be really important. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, you always want to end up with that with the best seed and the easiest first round game, because once the playoffs comes, a lot of times you throw out the records, and you know, everything being equal, you know, we've seen the upsets along the way. You want to grab that number one seed. The Bucks are going to just be so tough, though.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, the thing is about the Celtics, even if they do not make up ground and finish second in the Eastern Conference, they do have, by a slight margin, they have the best road record in the entire league, in the entire NBA. They're, I believe, 21-12 on the road, and the Bucks are 20-13. Both of them are really outstanding on the road. Whereas you look in the Western Conference, even though the Denver Nuggets are in first place with a 5-game cushion, their away record is basically .500. I believe they're like 16-16. So all the more important for the Celtics to try to keep winning. Don't take your foot off the pedal, because if you can finish first, you know, I just see some great things if they have a 7th game at the Garden against whoever they get to play in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
What's the story with Grant Williams?
Grant Williams is, I think, kind of rounding his way back into the rotation. I really think if Joe Mazzulla, you know, in private, might say he was a little ticked at him for a few games, and that's why his minutes went down. But I think Grant Williams will be fine. Like I've said in the past, if he could just concentrate on basketball and not the officials, because he could be he can hit the 3-point shot, as we've seen all year. And he could also be a very good defensive player against big guys, which we've seen all year. So, you know, I think he'll be one of the rotation guys come the playoff time. I know, Tim, you talk about shortening the bench, and Joe Mazzulla will certainly do that. I think Grant Williams will be one of the rotation guys, whether it be the 7th man or the 8th man. I think he'll get a lot of minutes in the playoffs. So, you know, I don't see any problems with him as long as he doesn't go off the deep end with the officials anymore, you know?
Yeah, you kind of hope that becomes part of the the maturation process of the
right.
of the young man, where you just have to know time and place, and in the playoffs, it's not the time and it's not the place.
That's right. That's right. And of course, Rick, our other problem child, Robert Williams, continues to mystify us all because he's still out with the injury. But I saw a comment that he's, quote, feeling great and he could join the team on this six-game road swing that they're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I don't believe it. I mean, you know, I'm not exactly, I don't think he's exactly trustworthy in terms of a timetable. There's no, whenever you put a timetable on Robert Williams, you don't know if it'll come through, you know, at that, with that timetable. So, I don't know. I think it remains to be seen. As usual, Robert Williams, we don't know when he'll rejoin the team, whether it'll be at the middle of the six-game road trip or at the end of it or when they come back to the Garden in about 10 days, whatever it is. You just don't know about him, but he's certainly a vital player in the scheme of things, and I know that Joe Mazzulla would love to have him out there playing steady minutes game after game after game come the first round of the playoffs.
But what does that create for Coach Mazzulla in terms of difficulty of who's, you know, who his lineup is? Because if you can't depend upon him, you've got to put guys out there that you can trust and are going to win every single day. You've got to find that combination. And then when Williams comes back, what do you do now? I mean, I think it's getting worse instead of better.
Well, I agree with that, Rick. I think, you know, Mazzulla at some point will have to make a decision and say, okay, if we can't rely on Robert Williams, even when he comes back, maybe he should just come off the bench and play 15 to 20 minutes a game or 18 minutes a game and then stick with the guys who are going to play a lot. And that means, you know, obviously Al Horford, who's been absolutely great as a 36-year-old, you know, he's going to have to play steady minutes and play a lot of minutes in the playoffs. You know, it means maybe that Grant Williams gets some of those minutes that Robert Williams would have gotten as a defensive guy, even though he's much shorter than Robert Williams. Sam Hauser, you could probably count on him because he's been shooting the three-pointer really well. They're not centers, but they're guys that you can rely on. They've been around all season. They don't get hurt, knock on wood. And they've been available to Joe Mazzulla. Availability is a big thing. And, of course, fortunately for the Celtics, Jason Tatum is still having a fabulous season. And he seems to have gotten a second win. I know I've complained about him playing too many minutes, but some games he's still playing fantastic. He gets you 40 points, 36. We almost take it for granted he's been so good. And, of course, Jaylen Brown has also been outstanding, still averaging 25, 26 points a game. So if those two guys are healthy and Marcus Smart is healthy, and, of course, to me, two key guys, Rick, and we talk about them all the time, whether they come off the bench or start, Derek White has just been tremendous
mm-hmm.
all season, particularly the second half of the season. And, of course, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, who I think could easily be the sixth man of the year in the NBA. I mean, he goes off, what's that game he started last week? He scored like 26 or 28, and then he's back on the bench one game later. He scores 22 off the bench. This guy has been so consistent. He's been just an outstanding shooter from two-point area as well as the three-point area. So that was just a tremendous pickup. When you talk about depth going into the postseason, when you have a Derek White and a Malcolm Brogdon around, you're going to be strong. You're going to be a competitor. You're going to be a threat to win that Eastern Conference, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Yeah, you know, Mike, you watch Derek White play, and he's a mile-a-minute man.
Yeah.
You know, he brings it up, and he's flying from the time he puts the ball down, as opposed to his counterpart, who Roger brings it up, he's surveying the floor, he's looking, he makes the pass, he makes the cut, he gets an open spot, he gets the ball, and he's making a nice shot.
Yeah.
It's like two competing styles when you watch those two play.
Now, Tim, I'll ask you this. Would we rather have Malcolm Brogdon and Derek White or Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving? I call them the hoop honeymoon. Now, they're playing tonight, except that they're, again, out of the lineup, both of them. Doncic, when Doncic got hurt a few days ago, Kyrie suddenly invented an injury, okay? He invented an injury. So he was out the same night as Doncic, and they lost. Now, tonight, they announced that Doncic is out, and Kyrie is suddenly out. And even when both of them have played together, I believe they're 2-6, okay, when they're on the court at the same time. So they're starting to get some concerns in Dallas that the team isn't going – in the right direction with those two superstars. So for me, personally, in terms of attitude and playing the game the right way, I'll take Malcolm Brogdon, and I will take Derek White as a combination.
Well, you know how much man love I have for Brogdon. I think he's absolutely awesome. And
right.
Derek White has really grown on me. Those are two quintessential Celtics. If you want to design different Celtic position players, there they are. And the other thing I like about Derek White is he has infused himself into the community. Have you seen that?
No, well, I've heard that about him. I haven't seen specifically what he's been doing.
He's been working with kids, I know that, and he's done a couple of different things, on his days off and stuff. And it's just so cool. I know they're, you know, the pro teams are committed to doing some of that stuff, but there's a special place for guys who do it out of the goodness of their hearts.
Right, right. Oh yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. You know, and if I can go back to one point about Damon Stoudemire and all that. And any time you see the Celtics player or any NBA team now, you see the head coach, and then you see approximately 5 to 7 assistant coaches in the second row of the bench. And, like, I think back to the days when Tommy Heinsohn, and Tim, you'll chuckle at this, and Rick, you will too. When Tommy Heinsohn was coaching and they won those championships in 1974 and 76, his assistant coach, and I was there practically every day, they had one guy, John Killalay.
Yep, Killalay.
Melrose High School.
Yep.
Melrose High School. And that was the entire coaching staff. Two guys, and they won two championships with those guys. So it just shows you what a different world it is in the NBA these days. Each of these players needs to be coddled, and they almost have like their own individual assistant coach working with them. I'm not complaining about that, but that's just the way it is compared to the 1970s
yep.
and 80s.
Mike, you take back even further before Tommy to Red Auerbach. And
yeah.
They asked him, how come you don't have an assistant coach? He goes, why? It's another guy I got to teach.
Yeah, he's the ultimate winner, of course. You know, he had Bill Russell as his greatest player. That's not a bad place to start.
No.
Should we wrap up, Rick, with a Power 5 today?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. There's going to be a subtle change. You know, I'm still going to go with the Cleveland. Although I got to say, the Sacramento Kings have been playing fantastic, and they're on the cusp of being in the Power Five. The Knicks fall out of the Power Five because
Ooh.
They've experienced some difficulties in the past week.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to go back to Cleveland as a number five team.
Yep.
I keep waiting for them to fall apart, and they don't.
I know.
They just hang around. They're only like 3 games behind the Philadelphia 76ers, who are in third place in the Eastern Conference. So I got to go with them at the number 5 spot. I got to go with Philly at the number 4 spot because they continue to hang around and be a threat. I'm going with the Denver Nuggets have slid lately, so I'm going with them at the number 3 spot, and I'm tucking those Boston Celtics back into the number 2 position.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Milwaukee Bucks, who still, even though they lost Saturday night in overtime, without Giannis, we should mention that, they've won like 19 of the last 21. So until they lose 2 or 3 in a row, they're still solidly number one right now. But the Celtics are creeping up. They're only a game and a half back. And the Celtics are playing Houston tonight. And you look at it on paper, and that should be, quote, an easy win. And, you know, they'll keep pace with the Bucks that way.
All right, before I let Tim have the final word with you, I want Tim to have the final words with you. Two things. One, your next assignment 2 weeks hence will be, I want you to talk about basketball writers that you have come across. And the one that pops out in my mind, I think I've told Tim this, was we talked with Christopher Gasper. He's not necessarily a basketball writer, but he is a writer.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely right. He could write novels.
Oh, my God. I have to keep a dictionary with me when I'm reading his columns, and I love it.
You need a thesaurus,
yes.
And a dictionary and all that. And,
yes.
And sometimes we don't understand those big words.
I don't either. That's why I have a dictionary with me, and I love it. And
you know,
the other thing is I want a complete report on Springsteen.
Yeah, you will, because it will be my number 227, show.
Holy jeez.
Going back to March 25th, 1977, at the Music Hall in Boston was my first Springsteen show. And obviously it had an impression on me because I've gone 225 times since then.
Oh, God.
It's been like not only the United States, but my wife Eileen and I have seen him in Canada and Europe and obviously many of the United States. So it's been quite a run. It's longer than the run that Robert Williams is having.
By far.
But anyway, it's been fun. So, yeah, but Tim, I'm glad we talked a little bit about the Patriots and then dove into Damon Stoudemire and then the Celtics. And I like the way, I think the Celtics are trending. My final word would be I think the Celtics are trending upward again. I think they're playing really well together. And I think a lot of it has to do with Brogdon and Derek White and Horford, obviously, and then to go with the two pillars of the community there, you know, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, both of whom are having outstanding years again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike, my last question to you is, name five of the Red Sox.
I'm sorry, what?
Name five of the Red Sox.
Yeah, well, you know what? Rick made a great point about Chris Sale. He's been talking smack. In a spring training, he'll talk about how he owes it to the team. He owes it to the fans. He owes it to management. But let's see what he can do when the bell rings, as they say. And I think the bell will be ringing a lot quicker these days in Major League Baseball, right, Tim? We're talking games that are going like 2 hours and 25 minutes and 2 hours and 18 minutes as opposed to 3 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mentioned last week, you know, if the umpires would simply do their job and move the game along, you wouldn't need a pitch clock. I'm sorry. You know, I've got to say, baseball has been the only sport that does not have penalties in it.
Right.
Now it does.
Yep.
Every other major sport has penalties.
Yep, and now the players are going to have to adhere to the new rules, and we hope they're going to be enforced all year. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
All right, Mike.
It's
been great, Mike. Appreciate it. Have fun next Monday.
We will do, and we'll talk in a couple weeks, and maybe the Celtics will be in first place.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike.
Right.
A lot of fun.
Right, bye-bye now.
Take care.
Tim, bye-bye.
Tim, you know the first name that came to mind when you said name five of them? Ryan Brazier.
Oh, geez.
Isn't that sad?
Is he still with him?
I think he is. And I can name Chris Sale, Kiki Hernandez, Verdugo, Story.
He's hurt, doesn't count.
Dalbec, Bobby Dalbec still with him. God. Help me out, man, I don't know.
Evans.
I don't know. Who? Oh, Rafael. Oh, my God. How'd we forget Rafael? Isn't that weird? Immediately forgot him because of all these other guys. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I can name the 67 starting team, but I can't name the starting nine for the Red Sox.
I could name the 1958 starting nine of the Milwaukee Braves, the New York Yankees, and the Red Sox. But I can't. Isn't that weird?
I can name almost all the starters from the first Red Sox game I ever saw early 1960s.
Yep, I believe it. But so who are these guys? I don't know. They got the new kid from Japan who's never played a major league game, but I guess he's wrecking the ball down there.
On any level.
Yeah. And apparently he's wrecking the ball, but he's what, 29, 30 years old, something like that?
Now that's the problem. They don't get over here until they're that old.
I know. It's going to be fun, I'll tell you, or not. But, you know, Alex does a good job, and they, what are they, 8-1 or 9-1, something like that down there?
Yeah. They finally lost last weekend.
Yeah, so who knows? What the bozo? I don't know. I don't understand the whole deal. I'm sure the Yankees will be up there once again. But we can talk about that later. Anything else, Tim? It's been fun tonight.
I've been good. I'm afraid of getting cut off, but, you know.
Oh, please. Oh, please. Please, when has anybody ever silenced you? Give me a break. Oh, that's right. I've got the control of the mic. Hey, Coach, good talking with you. Hopefully we'll be back at it next week.
Well, all right. Just Mike's not going to be here. Okay.
Yeah, just Mike. We'll have to come up with some ideas for next week. It's the transition time between winter sports and spring sports for high school, so we'll probably talk a little high school baseball if you want.
Yeah, I'll see if I can get a hold, talk to Rory Gentile, the Gloucester baseball head coach. And,
that'd be cool, yeah. That'd be cool.
The weather forecast is turning bad, so it's time for spring.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Everybody books the gym. All right, Coach, be well, man. Take it easy this week. We'll talk to you Monday.
All right, Eric.
Thank you, Tim. Take care.
Later.
All right, bye-bye. That's our sports analyst Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. Don't forget, tomorrow we have the Salem News Sports Podcast with the Salem News Sports Writers. And big shoe tomorrow night. Tomorrow morning at about 8 a.m. Salem News Sports Writers Podcast with Bill Newell hosting. And, of course, it's with the executive sports director, sports editor, rather, Phil Stacey, the assistant sports editor, Matt Williams, and reporter Nick Giannino, and, of course, the Gloucester Times sports editor, Nick Kukuru, all with Bill Newell. And you want to check that out. They cover everything. And then on Thursday, we've got the sports desks that will be dropping with Nick and Nick. Nick Kukuru and Dominic DeCastro, North Shore Sports Desk, and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. So you want to stay tuned for that. And in between, we've got a lot of information out there on MSO. Please pass the word along. And if you have any suggestions or complaints, send them along to send the complaints to Tim. But any suggestions, it's msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. So on behalf of Bill and Tim and Bill, miss anybody? I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good evening. Be well, do the right thing.